From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, President Obama visits the Baseball Hall of Fame. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts about Governor Cuomo's choice for lieutenant governor. And organizations in New York and New Jersey are opposing a crude oil pipeline. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. For the third time in a month, President Barack Obama traveled to New York. This time, he stopped at the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum to promote tourism and economic development. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was there and filed this report.
Today, I'm here in Cooperstown to talk about some new steps that will lead to more tourism, not just within America, but getting more folks to come and visit the treasures, the national treasures that we have all across this country, including the Baseball Hall of Fame right here in Cooperstown.
The president spoke before a crowd of about 150 invited guests inside the Hall of Fame's plaque gallery, the first sitting president to visit the Hall of Fame and first to visit Cooperstown since Martin Van Buren in 1839, delivered a simple message. Tourism means jobs.
When visitors come here, they don't just check out the hall. They rent cars, they stay in hotels, they eat at restaurants, and that means for upstate New York, the Baseball Hall of Fame is a powerful economic engine.
The president said in 2013, travel and tourism was responsible for $1.5 trillion in economic activity, supporting approximately 8 million jobs. He added that since the low point during the recession, the United States has added nearly 580,000 new travel and tourism jobs. And when visitors from outside the U.S. see the sights, it's considered a form of export. The president provided details of a memorandum he introduced Thursday that would encourage more foreign tourists to visit the United States by improving the travel experience at the nation's airports.
I met with several CEOs of travel and tourism companies, and building on the progress that we've made, I've directed my administration to work with airports, airlines, hotel groups, states, and cities to do more to improve the traveler experience and reduce wait times for folks entering into the United States, all without compromising our security.
In the audience were Scott Donahue, CEO of the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport, and Rosie Andolino, Chicago Department of Aviation Commissioner. Governor Andrew Cuomo, who was scheduled to speak before the president, arrived late to the Hall of Fame after traveling from Long Island, where he accepted the Democratic Party's nomination for re-election. After the president spoke, Cuomo met with reporters and said he hears the president's call for improving the nation's airports.
Literally this morning, I was actually talking about how JFK and LaGuardia and our ports, our airports are substandard. They've been under construction, I think, as long as I've been alive. You know, it seems every time I've gone to the airport during my lifetime, they've been under construction. So we have to rebuild them. To begin with, and the operation has to be better. You know, the president's point is right.
In January, Cuomo joined Vice President Joe Biden in Albany to talk about infrastructure improvements, where the two also discussed the condition of the nation's airports. The governor added that change in the state's travel system, as advocated by the president, does not need to be tied up in bureaucracy.
Well, we always do it this way. It has to be this way. No, it doesn't. You know, things don't have to take a long time. That's a government mindset. And what he's saying is find a way to do it faster, do it easier. don't sacrifice security, but it doesn't have to be a bureaucratic quagmire.
President Obama also called for a raise in the minimum wage to spur growth in a period of slow economic recovery. In his closing remarks, he used the history of baseball as a metaphor for America's overcoming challenges.
Every generation faces tough times, but in the words of the great Yogi Berra, they're just deja vu all over again. We know we are up to these challenges. And just as our parents and our grandparents faced challenges a lot tougher than the ones we face, and just as they went ahead and built an economy where hard work was rewarded and responsibility was rewarded and opportunity was open to all people, we can do the same.
The president is scheduled to return to the region next week for commencement at West Point.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Governor Andrew Cuomo was nominated this week to run for a second term along with his freshly chosen running mate, former Western New York Congresswoman Kathy Hochul. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt has more.
I accept your nomination to be governor of the state of New York.
Cuomo was nominated by a diverse group ranging from former President Clinton, Harry Belafonte, and union leaders, all via video, and ending with an endorsement from his daughters. Cuomo, speaking to a packed and excited hall of delegates, recounted his accomplishments, including passing same-sex marriage, rebuilding the Tappan Zee Bridge, and capping property taxes.
My friends, we did what we said we were going to do. New York is on the move, and we ain't going back.
The governor painted his GOP opponent, Rob Astorino, who he did not mention by name, as a backwards-thinking extremist.
They believe that if you grant other people's rights, it diminishes their rights. We believe when you grant other people rights, it enhances our own rights.
Andy says he needs 4 more years to achieve more goals, including better preparedness for superstorms, helping more African American and Latino children go to college, and to cut property taxes. He says he also wants to achieve 3 major unfinished progressive goals: the DREAM Act, to give children of undocumented immigrants college aid; the Women's Equality Act, which contains an abortion rights provision; and public campaign finance. Cuomo blamed Republicans in the Senate, who he says have blocked those items.
And we need to complete our social reform agenda. The state Senate so far has failed to deliver. We must pass a Women's Equality Act, public finance, and a DREAM Act. And we will.
At the same time, Cuomo praised Republicans, saying they enabled him to reach across the aisle and end government gridlock on the state budget. Cuomo's running mate, former Western New York Congresswoman Kathy Hochul, praised the governor for delivering on promises to help economically distressed Buffalo. Hochul lashed out at her GOP opponents, saying they're against Cuomo's startup program, which offers a tax-free plan to new businesses, and for opposing the monetary grant to the region known as the Buffalo Billion.
Now, the Buffalo Billion is up there in the hearts and minds of West New Yorkers, like the Sabres, the Bills, chicken wings. You don't mess with this stuff, okay? I mean, you know, next, was he going to call for the elimination of the chicken wing? I mean, come on, where are you going to hurt? You're going to go after us here. You can't touch that.
The governor was next headed to Cooperstown to join President Obama for an event highlighting tourism. At the Democratic State Convention on Long Island, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, the Democrats held their convention this week out on Long Island. Governor Cuomo, of course, renominated to be the candidate for governor. But he picked a new running mate, who is Kathy Hochul from Western New York, after Lieutenant Governor Duffy, former mayor of Rochester, stepped aside.
Or some say walk the plank. David, Andrew Cuomo is a brilliant political strategist. They didn't like it when I wrote a column, you know, saying he was a Machiavellian figure. I don't know why they could take offense by that. I've always admired Machiavelli. And he's brilliant. And in this time, he takes somebody from Western New York, from Buffalo. It has often been said, you know, by many that he spends an awful lot of time out there. Clearly, his pollsters and other people are telling him this is an important place to be. And so he chooses a woman, and he, at the same time, chooses somebody who is from this politically sensitive part of New York State, Buffalo. And if one thing could be said about the governor, he's been consistent about making sure that he spends time in Buffalo and that he supports that place.
Two other people he supports in the convention and on the ticket, Thomas DiNapoli, the comptroller, and Eric Schneiderman, the attorney general. An interesting article this week in the Times on the attorney general Schneiderman, his opponent, Mr. Cahill, and the behind-the-scenes workings.
Yeah, you know, this is so interesting. Almost everybody knows that there has been tension between the governor and Schneiderman, the attorney general, who now has the job that he, Governor Cuomo, used to have. It has now been established as a jumping-off point for running for governor, and maybe Governor Cuomo is looking over his shoulder and seeing Schneiderman, but there has been some real ruffled feathers between the two guys over a number of subjects in the past. And Comptroller DiNapoli, he didn't even endorse DiNapoli in the last election, and DiNapoli almost didn't win, although I have to tell you, he's become immensely popular in New York State now. Because the stock market has turned around and because the pension funds are flush, there is no question that the localities are very grateful because they're going to have to put less money into the state pension fund because they handle their pensions in their communities. And DiNapoli has received huge ovations where he has gone. I think people may sense that that Cuomo has bullied DiNapoli a little bit, I don't think they like it. I think it's not a good thing. And the Cuomo people have a guy out there trying to sort of sniff around the pension funds. You know, as you know, Tom DiNapoli is the controller, is the sole controller of where the pension money gets invested. Of course, that has to look very attractive to the governor's people. And they have people looking at how they can get the governor's folks in on making the decisions about where the pension money goes. The comptroller's office has resisted that. So now we hear rumors that one of the Cuomo fundraisers, and actually read it in printed version, has been raising money for the attorney general, Republican attorney general candidate. And so people say, well, since Cuomo clearly is the guy who keeps the Republicans in power in the New York State Senate, he may would rather have a Republican as the attorney general who is indebted personally to him for having supported him. Who knows? These are just some of the things people are saying.
This week, New Yorkers voted on school budgets, and you spoke with the executive director of the New York State School Boards Association, Tim Cramer, and three things. They support Common Core, a big supporter of the Education Commissioner, John King, and he acknowledged your question about the unions becoming more militant.
Well, they are becoming more militant. We know that. Our friend Richard Iannuzzi, who was the head of the statewide union and a feet on the ground, a very decent fellow, was defeated. Michael Mulgrew, who was the fiery union leader from New York City, UFT leader from New York City, has really begun to be the guy in education. The teachers, understandably, have issues with charter schools, which are often not unionized, and the School Boards Association has some of the same issues with the charters, because when a charter school comes into an area, it means that the public money gets further divided. And King has rolled out the Common Core, which everybody knows New York got into in order to get the money for the race to the top from the federal government. And the school boards are much more in favor of that than the unions are, because the unions say, well, it was done too fast. We weren't prepared. We asked our teachers to do what they weren't trained to do. But still, almost everybody agrees that the standards that are in the Common Core are those that most people think our children should know when they graduate. The school boards are on that side of the fight. The teachers are often on the other side saying we were left unprepared in order to adopt all of this. So it was fascinating to hear Tim Cramer. It's spelled Cramer, but it's pronounced Cramer. Everybody should know that.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Various communities across New York have played host to forums that purport to address gun violence. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas examines whether such gatherings are an effective tool or a waste of time.
A series of recent community gatherings held at various branches of the Albany Public Library and most recently at Albany High School have gotten media attention but have come up short when it comes to catching the eyes and ears of police departments and public officials. Community advocate Marlon Anderson organized the majority of the forums.
The problem with the gun violence issue is that it has not been given the priority or the seriousness that it is due from the community that it most affects. We're leaving it to different organizations or different individuals. This has to be an overall effort.
Some 90 miles to the west in Utica, a Shots Fired forum is scheduled tonight. Patrick Johnson, founder of the Hoops and Dreams Project, has partnered with local officials and hopes residents will show up following a homicide within the past month and two shootings last week.
We do not have the frequency of homicides or shootings here in Utica that you unfortunately have in Albany. We did have a forum a few months ago, and unfortunately, the turnout that we were looking for, we did not get. So we are readdressing this. This is spearheaded by Councilman Jerome McKenzie, but several of us are in partnership in this effort to build awareness.
Longtime Albany community activist Alice Green would like to see the manufacture of weapons cease, but she realizes that is very unlikely.
People use guns in violent acts because there's something else going on in their lives. They're either frustrated, in poverty, angry. All of these issues are there, but we haven't tried to address them and get at the heart of why people have to use violence. So it's more than just taking guns off the street by gun buyback programs and all of that. It's really changing our society in terms of how we view guns and recognizing that in many ways our society is very violent. We see it everywhere, and yet we are surprised when people actually use violence to address issues.
Green adds, the jury is out regarding the effectiveness of various programs that have been launched in cities struggling to deal with gun violence, where gangs and endemic poverty prevail in challenged neighborhoods.
There's a lot of concern in the community about how to reach young people, because the fear is that they're all going to eventually end up with guns. People are not really talking to them in a way that connects to that young population.
Patrick Johnson agrees.
It is becoming an all too familiar occurrence in black and brown communities. And for that reason, I think that people are all but at a loss as to how to approach it. But it is essential that we keep hope and that we do not give up.
The public is invited to listen and speak out tonight at 6 p.m. at the Thea Bowman House Auditorium in Utica. Albany police attribute the increase in shootings since the last quarter of 2013 to intercity gang rivalry. City officials did not return requests for comment.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. 38 organizations in New York and New Jersey are asking the governors to join them in opposing a proposed pipeline that would carry crude oil from the Port of Albany to refineries in New Jersey. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
There are no formal plans yet, but environmental and grassroots groups say they want to be ahead of the game as Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings ramps up proposals for an East Coast oil pipeline. The concept is to allow the transport of oil from the Port of Albany to the Phillips 66 refinery in Linden, New Jersey. A coalition of groups from New York and New Jersey opposed to the project held a conference call Tuesday. New Jersey Sierra Club Director Jeff Tittle calls the Pilgrim Pipeline unnecessary and says it threatens the region's environment and water supply.
We believe that this oil is dangerous no matter how you ship it, and that this pipeline cutting through the most densely populated region in the country and going past many of the most important environmentally sensitive areas, this doesn't mean rail is going to end. It just means we're going to have more and more of this oil. We're going to become awash in it.
Riverkeeper Watershed Program Manager Kate Hudson says the pipeline company approached the group seeking its support.
We are very concerned that Pilgrim is a company that has never owned or operated a pipeline before and seems to be a relatively small and undercapitalized company. This pipeline will pass a number of significant tributaries to the Hudson River watershed. It would also require crossing the Catskill and Delaware aqueducts, which supply New York City drinking water. Given these risks, we are opposed to this pipeline project moving forward.
The Sierra Club Atlantic chapter is based in Albany. Conservation Director Roger Downs explains the plans, as known, would place the pipeline within the Thruway Corridor from Albany, with connections to the Port of Albany and the Selkirk Rail Yard, to the I-287 Beltway terminating at Linden.
Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings has introduced the narrative that this pipeline will supplant other problematic forms of crude oil transport, namely barges on the Hudson River and rail, but there is no guarantee that the pipeline itself will not just augment capacity, moving even more Bakken crude through New York without alleviating river or rail traffic. There's also no guarantee that crude by pipeline is a safer alternative.
The project is in its initial phase of development, with the company conducting the feasibility of a route between Albany and Linden. Pilgrim Pipeline Holdings Vice President of Development George Bochus says two pipelines, one 18 inches and the other 16 inches in diameter, buried below the frost line, would meet market needs. Bochus says it's safer and should reduce the amount of barge and rail transport of oil.
By building our pipeline, we're not going to create a doubling of the demand for refined products in the Hudson River Valley. We're going to find a more efficient and safer way to transport it. We're not creating a demand, just getting it there safer, faster, and more efficiently. The argument that somehow that doesn't take the barge trip off the river, I don't understand that.
Pilgrim Pipeline plans to submit applications to the appropriate state agencies sometime this summer to begin the permitting process. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1421. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.